From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Listen, we are so excited to tell you that the great Dick Van Dyke will be joining us later to play Not My Job on this week's show. Very excited about that. But first, it was a weird week for all of us at NPR because of the Juan Williams controversy. You know, we became the news for a little while rather than just reporting on it. And, you know, it's not our place really to comment. But just by the way, just on the off chance that any of our bosses at NPR are listening, whenever I get on a plane and see guys in Muslim garb, I always think, that, my friend, is a handsome dishdasha. But now, whatever you're wearing, give us a call. The number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, who's this?
This is Tim from Minneapolis.
Hey, Tim. How are things in Minneapolis? Hey. Wow. Minnesotans here, no doubt.
Shout out to the Minneapolis contingent.
You bet. You bet. You bet. So let's see. It's mid-October. Has the first snow fallen?
It's been a beautiful fall, but we are all aware of the imminence of the next season.
Yes, I know. Well, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to an alum of Second City and the Colbert Report, Mr. Peter Gross.
Hi there.
Hi, Peter.
Next, a blogger and a deputy editor for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor, right there.
Hi, Tim.
Finally, a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and the host of Foodography on the Cooking Channel, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Hi, Mo.
Hi, Tim.
Now, Tim, as per normal, you're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle is going to recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice, on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
I can't wait.
All right. Now I feel like making you wait, because I'm perverse. No, let's just do it. Here we go. Here's your first quote.
Yesterday, if you were in and you were out, you were in. Today, if you're out and you're in, you're out.
That was former Senator Fred Thompson about the back and forth in court on what policy this week?
Don't ask, don't tell.
Exactly right. Don't ask, don't tell. The U.S. law preventing gays from serving openly in the U.S. military used to be known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now it's called Mother May I. I'm gay. Can I enlist? On Tuesday of this week? Yes, you may. On Thursday? No, you may not.
The Army wants gay soldiers one day, doesn't want them the next day. I think that the Army might be bisexual.
I think the Army is just playing hard to get. Right? You can come in. No, you can.
Well, or it could be that the Army is just experimenting. It's going through a phase.
I know.
It's the Army's college.
Yeah.
The Army is a sophomore at Wellesley. Who knew? Very good. Here's your next quote.
I would love you to consider an apology sometime and some full explanation of why you did what you did with my husband. Okay, have a good day.
That was a message left in the answering machine of Professor Anita Hill, who gave her an early morning call asking for an apology.
Clarence Thomas's wife.
Indeed, Virginia Thomas. That's right. Miss Thomas has the kind of Saturday morning routine familiar to all of us. She gets up, does a half an hour of cardio, makes some coffee, calls Anita Hill and demands an apology for something that happened 20 years ago, listens to Car Talk, does the jumble. Professor Hill's accusations of sexual harassment back in 1991 did not prevent Clarence Thomas from getting on the court, where he's been delivering his conservative opinions through mime ever since. But Mrs. Thomas apparently could not let this go, it seems. Why? We don't know. Maybe she's enrolled in a kind of bizarro world 12-step program where you call out people you've wronged and ask them to apologize.
I'm not going to be ignored, Anita. I want Carl to do the outgoing message for Anita Hill. If you're calling expecting an apology, you've got the wrong number.
Some people have suggested that this is true. They've suggested this. You know, they say that this might have happened because Mrs. Thomas was on a sleep aid like Ambien that causes this kind of behavior.
Oh.
And we looked, sure enough, on the side of the Ambien bottle, it says, may cause inappropriate contact with Anita Hill. Turns out Mrs. Thomas borrowed the pills from her husband.
What if she picked up the phone and pressed redial and was like, what? Oh, my God. Well, then you better apologize because my husband didn't do anything wrong.
Here's your last quote, Tim.
The rent is too damn high.
That was a refrain spoken by one Jimmy McMillan in the New York gubernatorial debate. Mr. McMillan represents what political party?
I love this man's facial hair. The rent is too damn high party.
Exactly right. The rent is too damn high party. The New York debate featured all seven candidates in that race, including the Democrat Cuomo, the Republican Palladino, the former Madam Kristen Davis. But best of all, Jimmy McMillan, candidate of the rent is too damn high party.
And so is the candidate.
Yeah, apparently. He wore black gloves, something to do, he said, with Agent Orange, and he has a beard like an S&M Santa Claus. He believes that the rent is too damn high and that New York should raise its mountains upstate to build industrial parks.
When you're waiting, what was fun is once he said it, he started talking and you were like, oh, he's going to get to it.
Yeah.
I got to tell you one thing. And I'm going to tell you another thing. Just get to it, Jimmy. Get to it. Rent is too damn high. And I was like, yay! We did it!
The weird thing, though, is everybody agrees this was the best debate of the entire electoral season. It was great.
By far. Anytime Carl Palladino is not the craziest person on stage.
Which has never happened
before.
It's going
to be exciting.
It was just great. We think, first of all debates should have Jimmy McMillan in them, by law.
Sure.
And secondly, everybody should name their political parties after something they shout after drinking way too much. Why is the room spinning? Party.
Somebody threw up on my shirt.
Party.
In the, oh crap, I just called Anita Hill party. Carl, how did Tim do?
Tim was perfect, Peter. Three correct answers. So, Tim, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Carl.
Well done, Tim.
Thank you, Tim, and bundle up.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Kerry, like a lot of Republican candidates this year, Alaskan Senate candidate Joe Miller is concerned about border security. This week, he referenced the success of the past as a model for how we might secure our borders. What country did he point to as an inspiration?
Oh, let me guess, because I don't know the answer. Somebody who's really good with their borders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, very secure borders.
Very secure,
very secure
borders.
Barbed wire, guard towers.
Ooh, that could be a lot of places.
So good they had to bring in supplies by airlift.
Huh. Germany, Berlin?
Yes, East Germany, actually, was what he referenced. You and I think of East Germany. We think of a totalitarian state that imprisoned its own citizens. Joe Miller says, sure, but you know, they had very few Mexicans. Keep in mind that Miller is an army veteran who actually served on the East German border as you listen to this. Quote, East Germany was very, very able to reduce the flow. If East Germany could, we could, unquote. So we imagine him, he's standing there, right, looking at the barbed wire and the guard towers, and he does not realize that they are there to keep people in. You know, oh, that person running toward me while being shot at by border guards must be an illegal with a very poor sense of direction.
Whenever he's at the zoo, he's like, oh, man, I wish these cages weren't here. I'd really love to get at those animals.
Kerry, Green Party candidate Rich Whitney is facing an uphill battle in the race for Illinois governor. Things got worse for him when his name appeared on electronic voting machines with a typo listing Rich Whitney as what?
Rich Whitey.
Yes. The error appears on machines in 23 wards, many of which are in predominantly African-American areas. This is true. Being listed as Rich Whitey put him at a dead heat in the polls against his rival, Councilman Dumb Cracker. Officials say the error can't be fixed before Election Day. Whitney suspects foul play, says, quote, I don't want to be identified as a rich whitey. Mitt Romney replied, don't worry, it's not that bad. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Ariel from Philadelphia.
Hey, Ariel, how are you?
I'm well.
What do you do there in Philadelphia?
I actually work for the city.
Doing what?
I'm a planner and analyst for the Mayor's Office of Transportation and Utilities.
Oh, what's the big thing you're planning for Philadelphia?
I can't actually talk about that right now.
Really? Ooh. It's a secret.
No, making transit service better.
Wow. Yeah, it's death. Oh. It's death ray.
You know, you shouldn't have said it. You should have let us wonder. It would have been great if, like, you know, you didn't tell us, and then, like, next year Philadelphia advanced on Baltimore and seized it. Ariel, welcome to the show. You are going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Ariel's topic?
Not now, honey. I'm watching C-SPAN.
The grainy, single-camera coverage of congressional hearings and author speeches on C-SPAN has not made for scintillating programming until this week. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about C-SPAN finally broadcasting must-see TV. Choose the true story. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Sure.
Absolutely. Let us go. First up, let's hear from Peter Gross.
Viewers of Monday's edition of the popular C-SPAN show Book Notes were left wondering if they had accidentally tuned in to an episode of Jerry Springer. Author and historian Bennett McGuire was being interviewed about his new book, An Accidental President, The Publicly Private Life of Martin Van Buren. But when he was introduced to the assembled crowd as, quote, the nation's foremost Van Buren scholar, a derisive ha rang out from the audience. That's when author and historian Joseph Fleck walked to the front of the room, claimed he was the nation's foremost Van Buren scholar, and brandished his book, It Almost Didn't Happen, The Unlikely Presidency of Martin Van Buren. What the stunned crowd almost certainly did not know is that McGuire and Fleck had been engaged in a fierce Van Buren-based rivalry for almost 15 years. In fact, Mr. McGuire had once had to be thrown out of Mr. Fleck's book signing in Boston after showing up drunk carrying an unloaded 19th century pistol. But the rivalry finally became physical during this episode of Book Notes when, after Fleck accused McGuire of plagiarism, McGuire threw a copy of his book at Fleck, who ducked, and the book hit a member of the crowd in the head. Both Fleck and McGuire were escorted out of the hall by security, and the event was canceled. Said one bewildered audience member, I never thought I'd say this, but I really want to know more about Martin Van Buren.
Two Martin Van Buren scholars going at it. Your next story of C-SPAN stepping it up comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Miriam Kessler of Framingham, Mass., thought she just had insomnia. But when she turned on her TV at 3 a.m. last Friday, she decided she was losing her mind. The TV was tuned to C-SPAN 3, but instead of congressional hearings, there on the screen was a young man in a blonde wig, grass skirt, and coconut bra, dancing around with two other guys. She soon realized they were reenacting the famously corny Honey Bun number from South Pacific. Kessler did what many insomniacs do and wrote an email to C-SPAN honchos. And that's when the network found out that C-SPAN intern Caleb Kearns and his buddies had, well, taken programming into their own hands. I thought it was kind of funny, said Kearns. We thought we'd give C-SPAN a little taste of glee.
An impromptu musical performance late night on C-SPAN 3. And your last story of shockingly non-boring C-SPAN programming comes from Morocco.
If C-SPAN's live coverage of the Ways and Means Committee is too hot for you, then surely you're not ready for C-SPAN 2's bodice-ripping book TV. Nebbish conservative blogger Todd Seavey and wonky National Review editor Helen Riddlemeyer were clashing over political ideology when a tightly wound Seavey blurted out that Riddlemeyer, quote, was his girlfriend for a tumultuous 2 years and an expert at brutal gamesmanship. He accused the conservative Riddlemeyer of more than liberal sexual mores, of, quote, juggling multiple men, coldly playing matchmaker for one couple so she could seduce the man and hurt the woman. When you think about it, it is pretty creepy, he declared. What sort of evils are beyond the pale? Turns out Seavey had seethed about Riddlemeyer in an earlier blog post, reading, yes, that's right, you are evil. Bet you thought being a Hitler or a Jack the Ripper would feel a lot better from being you, but it doesn't. Sounds like the guy is pretty angry.
So you're sitting at home, you're a little bored, you want to get some, you know, civic discourse. So you turn on C-SPAN and you see one of these. From Peter Gross, a discussion of Martin Van Buren that turned violent when two Martin Van Buren scholars went at it. From Kiri O'Connor, it's late at night and some interns are doing musical numbers without permission. Or from Mo Rocca, a boring book discussion with conservatives that gets tawdry when one complains of a broken heart. Which of these is the true story of C-SPAN programming?
I'm going to go with the musical in the middle of the night.
The musical in the middle of the night. You think that so few people watch C-SPAN free that these guys could get away with that?
Well, first of all, I think no one actually wants to know more about Martin Van Buren. And if I was in charge of programming in the middle of the night on C-SPAN, I too would be in grass skirts and hulaing.
All right. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke with someone involved with the real story.
I suppose everyone reacts to the emotional pain of a breakup in a different way, but ranting on C-SPAN is pretty strange.
That was Helen Riddlemeyer. She's an associate editor of the National Review, and she was the woman who was accused of being a cruel heartbreaker on live C-SPAN by her ex-boyfriend. Unfortunately, Arielle, as you now know, you're also heartbroken, I assume.
Indeed.
I, Miss Riddlemeyer, that in fact Mo had the real story. You did not win, but you earned a point for Kiri for her charming story of late night South Pacific.
And hopefully she can make that show happen.
I think that'd be great.
I
would
watch that.
Arielle, thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You leave my heart in misery. If you go, then I'll be blue. 'Cause breaking up is hard to do. Remember when you helped me.
And now the game where we invite on great people to do silly things. It's called Not My Job. Our guest this week is a man whose TV shows and films are so beloved by so many and watched over and over again by so many succeeding generations that they named DVDs after him. Dick Van Dyke's movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is being released next month. His musical memoir Step in Time premieres in December at the Geffen Playhouse in L.A. Dick Van Dyke, welcome.
Thank you,
to
Peter.
Wait, don't tell me.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. All right, I just got to be personal. I have watched you for so long. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was my favorite movie when I was a kid, and I've watched Mary Poppins so many times, the Dick Van Dyke Show. So my first question to you is, will you be my dad?
I'm a little busy right now.
I understand.
I can be your grandpa.
That would be fine. I would take that at this point. Out of all the things you've done, is there one thing you're most proud of?
Well, I tell you, I gauge it by the amount of fun I had. And we all of us involved say the Dick Van Dyke Show was the best 5 years of our lives. It was, we were like otters at play.
Right.
It would never was worse.
Really? That's great. One of the odd things about that show, I mean, in a weird way, it was 30 Rock, I guess 40 years before 30 Rock, in the sense that it was a comedy TV show about a comedy TV show.
That's exactly right.
I thought that up myself. So, so I guess my question is, you made working in TV comedy look like an absolute joy. You and Maury Amsterdam and Rose Marie having a great time going home to your great house in New Rochelle. Was it really like that, working on the show?
It was. Everybody looked forward to coming to work every day. It was, Carl, of course, was a brilliant, brilliant writer.
Carl Reiner.
And we just couldn't wait to get in front of the audience and show them what we had. It was... I never wanted to quit. Carl wanted to quit after 5 years. he thought perhaps it got repetitive or something, I'd still be doing it if he'd let me.
You've been in show business for so long. Is there one thing that people recognize you most for? Can you guess what it is from the look on their face when they come up to you?
It's usually my voice. If I say something, that's what gives me away.
Really?
Because I have white hair now, you know.
I saw Night at the Museum. I know. How did you get started? You grew up in Danville, Illinois.
Right.
And we're here in Illinois. People are excited about that. And you started at a young age, right? You were singing. You were doing comedy. What were you doing?
Well, at the time, believe it or not, I started out as a teenager in radio.
Really?
I was an announcer at 16. During the war, everybody got drafted, so they had to hire me. And that got me started.
And you went out to the coast, as they say? You went out to L.A.?
Yeah, I went out here with a buddy of mine, and we did a little nightclub act. I did local television in Atlanta and New Orleans, little shows, and finally ended up under contract to CBS. And I did game shows, children's shows. Do you know that I was the anchor on the CBS morning show?
No.
And my newsman was Walter Cronkite.
Really?
I'm not kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
You're doing a memoir in December. Your musical memoir.
Yes, at the Geffen Theater here. I have a little quartet, three guys and me. We started out just singing at my house, having a pizza and singing every Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Somebody asked us to do a benefit, and then we did another one and another one. And all of a sudden, in August, we ended up at the Ford Theater in Washington singing for the president.
So you met the president?
I did.
Was he as tongue-tied and goofy with you as I am right now?
No, I was the tongue-tied one.
Really? When the president said, you know, I loved you in, what did he say? What was his thing?
Well, his wife, Michelle, said, you're my favorite show. And he said, she's not kidding.
There you are.
And then after we did our act, Baba came up on the stage and said, you've got to teach me those moves.
Did you?
No. Well, I didn't have a chance, but I think you could do them.
I assume you mean tripping over the ottoman. You did Mary Poppins, and despite your amazing charm and the incredible success of the movie, you did get a little guff for your accent.
Oh, I don't talk to British people because they just make a mess of me.
Really?
They tease me to death about it.
Are they good-natured about it, at least?
Oh, sure. They just tease me, but I'll never hear the end of that. I have a defense.
What is your defense, sir?
They got me a coach who was Irish. Oh. His name was Pat O'Malley, and he didn't do an accent any better than I did.
Dick Van Dyke, what a pleasure to have you on our show. We have asked you here this week to play a game we're calling...
Dick Van Dyke, meet Dick Van and Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke. Together, an iconic name in entertainment, but separated into its component words, it's three different things we can ask you about. Get two questions about the parts of your own name right. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in the home answering machine. Carl. Who is Dick Van Dyke playing for?
Dick is playing for Jeff Weinkoff of Eugene, Oregon.
Your first question, of course, is about a dick. In this case, Dick.
About what?
About a dick. A dick,
okay.
Dick. It's about Dick Nixon, specifically.
Yeah.
When a young man, Dick Nixon, fell in love with one Pat Ryan, who was acting in a play with her, he courted her fiercely, including doing what? A, composing a song in her honor titled Pat Pat, You Make My Heart Go Pitter-Pat, B, driving her to and from dates with other men, or C, making what some say might be history's first ever mixtape.
I think he wrote a song.
You think you're going to go with that?
Yeah.
Sadly, no. He did not write a song. He drove her to and from dates with other men. She wasn't sure about him, but he sure did love her, so he would drive her to and from dates with other men and wait around, like in a bookstore or a movie theater, until she was done and drive her home.
You're trying to say he was a pimp?
I'm sorry, but in the universe in which I live, you, Dick Van Dyke, do not know that word. I'm having some trouble. I'm trying to imagine, you know, Bert and Mary Poppins. Oh yeah, straight. It's where all the pimps are. Let's not go down there. Let's go here to Cherry Tree Lane. All right, we've done Dick.
What?
We've done Dick. Now it's time for Van. Chrysler.
Okay.
Chrysler. They invented the minivan back in the 80s. Has a brand new revolutionary van on the production line. What is it? A, the man van, the masculine minivan for men. B, the speed van, a 12-cylinder, 300-horsepower van that can do 180 miles per hour. Or C, the nano van, half the size of a standard minivan, but with still seven seats.
Oh, oh my word. I think it was called a man van.
Man van, you're right. It is the man van.
Oh, wait.
Men are notoriously resistant to minivans, so this one is designed to be appeal to them, more masculine. It'll have a, quote, sportier look, more chrome in the interior, that sort of thing. All right. We've done Dick. We've done Van. Now it's time for your third question on the subject of dykes.
I was afraid of that.
Yes. So we Googled, just because we were curious, world's biggest dyke. What did we find? Was it A, the Sammangium Dyke in the Yellow Sea, the Zuiderzee Dyke in the Netherlands, or the Weir Dyke near Lincolnshire in England?
I think it's the Zuiderzee.
You think it's the Zuiderzee?
Yeah.
That's an old dyke.
Well, I'm Dutch. It's got to be Zuiderzee.
Is that the first one or the third one, the Zuiderzee?
The Zuiderzee is the second one I mentioned.
What country was the first one in?
It's in the Yellow Sea.
The Yellow Sea? Oh, that one in China?
Yes.
Oh, that is the biggest one.
You're right.
Yeah.
Wow. Dyke, 21 miles long. Wait a minute.
I forgot about that one.
You actually knew that?
Yes, but it's fairly new, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, I knew all about that.
He's got to know all about all the dykes in the world. If your last name was Dyke, you'd keep up on all of them.
Well, that's remarkable. Carl, how did Dick Van Dyke do in our quiz?
Dick Van Dyke had two correct answers, Peter. So, Dick, you win for Jeff Weinkauf.
Well done. Banana.
You know there are words to that?
Really?
What are the words to the Dick Van Dyke theme song?
You want me to sing it for you?
Yes!
So you think that you got trouble? Well, trouble's a bubble. So tell old Mr. Trouble to get lost. Why not hold your head up high and stop crying? Start trying. And don't forget to keep your fingers crossed. When you find the joy of living is loving and giving, you'll be there when the winning dice are tossed. A smile is just a frown that's turned upside down, so smile on that frown or defrost. And don't forget to keep your fingers crossed, ba-doom, doom.
Oh! No, that was the greatest thing. That is fantastic. I love that.
Did he really?
That is fantastic.
Wow.
I may never be happier than I am right now.
This is NPR's first iTunes hit.
This is amazing. Dick Van Dyke made some of the best movies and TV shows I've ever seen, and I keep watching them. His musical memoir, Step in Time, premieres in December in Los Angeles. Dick Van Dyke, what a joy to finally talk to you and have you on our show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I will come back there and join you. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, sir. Take care. Good luck with the show.
Bye.
Bye-bye. In just a minute, Carl gets in trouble for some comments he made on the O'Reilly factor. It's our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Peter, President Obama is now getting ready for a diplomatic trip to India, but his advisors are urging him to cancel a planned trip to a famous Sikh temple. What are they worried about?
Offending Hindus?
No. They're not worried about the local audience. The local people want him to go into the Golden Temple in Amritsar. That's the name of it.
Oh, they're worried that he's going to have to put on some garb and they're going to
exactly.
take pictures of him and show it on the internet.
Specifically, a hat. Like at a Jewish synagogue, you have to keep your head covered in a Sikh temple. And the last thing in the world Obama's people want is to have him photographed in what looks like Muslim headgear. For one thing, it would fuel conspiracy theories. For another, it might scare Juan Williams. Unconfirmed reports had the White House asking if the president could wear some obviously American headgear, like, for example, a baseball cap or maybe that novelty hat with the beer can holders and
yeah.
the straw.
Yeah. That's American.
That's American.
A cheese hat from a Packers game.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Or a nacho helmet.
That would be hilarious. If the president goes into the greatest temple in the Sikh world with a foam cheese head on.
That's right.
For domestic, you know, because...
But my head's covered. Where does it say in your Sikh book that I can't have cheese on my head? It's not in there.
Peter, according to a new study, this is very surprising, a new study of canine behavior in the journal Current Biology, some dogs turn out to be what?
Cats.
No.
This is Current Biology?
Current biology.
I only read ancient biology. Current dogs turn out to be...
Basically, what this means is that some dogs look at the Alpo can and say, oh, it's half empty.
Pessimists?
Yes, some dogs are pessimists, according to the study. This is from a species that chases cars, but still. Scientists at the University of Bristol, they took dogs and let them loose in a room with a bowl of food in the corner. And they have some dogs were optimists. They just ran right over, assuming there'd be food in there. But some dogs didn't. They were like, oh, I'm just going to have my heart broken again. This is really a surprise, because everybody naturally assumes that all dogs are optimists. They're all like, I bet if I bring this stick back, he won't throw it again and make me go get it. But no. And it takes a real optimist to hump a leg and think the relationship will go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't there always... There's always a crotch to sniff around the corner.
There is.
Dogs
there
should
is.
Always be optimists.
They're like college boys.
Mo, scientists in Slovenia are trying to create robots that are incapable of injuring humans. To do this, they're building robots that do what?
Robots that are... robots... that are plush, robots that are...
that would be nice.
Robots yeah. that...
Well, I mean, they might call this robot Muhammad Wally.
Oh, boxing robots.
Well, they're punching robots.
Punching robots.
These robots, what
yes.
they do
yes.
is
That's
these
right.
robots...
That got a bell.
Jeez.
Wow.
Thank you.
Just so you guys yeah. know, that's okay. the standard for the bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These robots are programmed to punch humans until they cry. That's how it works. In Slovenia, six men, apparently fresh from a screening of Jackass 3D, agreed to be repeatedly punched in the arm by an industrial robot. The robots punched the humans 18 times at varying degrees of intensity while evaluating the humans' emotional responses. The scientists say the next generation of PunchBot will also steal the humans' lunch money, make fun of their moms, and after a software update, give them wet willies.
I thought that these were robots that wouldn't hurt you.
Well, that's this is the problem, you see? If you think about it, you want to make a robot that knows in its little robot brain how much is too much force to use in a human, so it won't hurt the human. Mm-hmm. The only way to figure that out is find out how much force does hurt a human.
You'd think that scientists, after years of being beaten up, would not try and figure out how to get beaten up. We're also going to invent a female robot that won't date you. Just to figure it all out.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's a game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show at the Paris Casino in Las Vegas, November 18th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Deb in Omaha.
Hey, how are things in Omaha?
Things are great.
You sound very cheerful. Is everybody in Omaha this cheerful this time of year?
Sure. It's autumn in Nebraska. Why not?
Autumn in Nebraska.
Sure. Tell me about autumn.
It's better than Alaska.
Yeah.
What's great about autumn in Nebraska?
One word. Yes. Football.
Football. I have been following how the Cornhuskers are doing this year.
Well, up until last week, yeah. pretty good.
Right.
Well, isn't the stadium in Lincoln the second most populated city or something?
Yeah, during right? a game, it's the most populated place in Nebraska.
It's the third most populated on game day, yeah.
Wow.
Outside of actually Lincoln and Omaha. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Sorry, North Platte.
Deb, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, just two, you'll be a winner. Ready to play?
Sure.
All right, here is your first limerick.
On a plane, I will soon lose my poise. That constant drone robs all life's joys. No wonder the meal lacks any appeal. The food tastes bad cause of the...
noise.
Right. If you've eaten a meal on a plane, you've probably thought, somewhere a cowboy is missing his horse. According to new research, though, the reason airplane food tastes bad is not because of its hasty preparation or poor quality ingredients or uninspired wine pairings. It's the roar of the airplane's engine. The noise dulls your senses and diminishes the flavor of the food. Bad news for flyers, but on the plus side, the next time you botch things at your dinner party, just leave your lawnmower running. Next to the dining room table.
Who commissioned this study? Delta Airlines?
Yeah.
Sky chefs.
A very guilty chef, yes. Yeah. Here is your next limerick.
If we treat our patrons like dirt, their feelings are bound to get hurt. So at Pizza Express, we'll praise your new dress. We're teaching the wait staff to...
flirt.
Right. You know what makes a pizza really great? A server who bats his eyelashes at you while coyly handing you the Parmesan. That is the thinking anyway at Pizza Express. It's a British restaurant chain, and they hired an actor to teach their staff to flirt with their customers. The goal is to flatter the customers into ordering more and tipping well. This will apparently succeed in Britain, where people are desperate to be found attractive. In America, to get people to eat more pizza, we just put more pizza in front of
them. And, okay.
Just replace the feeding bag.
Exactly.
I just have to say, I flew into O'Hare today, and I was in the men's room, and somebody walked out of the stall with two pizza boxes. And I'm telling you, that's the dream. I thought, okay, that's Chicago style.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's revolting. I tweeted about it and said, if anyone delivered a pizza in the last hour in the Chicago area, cancel.
I don't want to think about it, but it's like, what do? Do you put it on the floor? That's terrible. Do you hold it? That's worse. Do you put it on the floor? That's terrible.
Find a way to hook it. Like, yeah. Just do something.
All right.
Hand it to Larry Craig. Do something. Just like...
All right, Deb. Deb, here is your last limerick.
To the altar we're blissfully heading. The reception is what we are dreading. It's time to get wise. Let's serve Big Macs and fries. McDonald's will plan our big...
wedding.
Yes, that's right. McWeddings are here. Three Hong Kong McDonald's restaurants will be providing the wedding planning services. We'll also host anniversary events. Some traditional wedding features will be slightly different. Weddings will feature French fries, and wedding vows will be tailored to suit the occasion, such as, I promise to take you to be my husband, to have and to hold, for richer, for poorer, and in obesity, indigestion, hypertension, till death do us part, which in our case will come early from adult-onset diabetes.
Oh, my God.
Is Ronald McDonald going to officiate the wedding?
I believe Mayor McCheese, I believe.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, because he is the mayor.
That's true. The mayor.
And then the Mick divorce features an unhappy meal.
But you only get half of it.
Carl, how did Deb do?
Deb had a good game, Peter. Three correct answers, so Deb, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations, Deb. Thanks for playing our game.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Kerry O'Connor has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Peter Gross and Mo Rocca are tied for second. Each has 2.
All right. Oh. We flipped a coin. Mo is elected to go second. Peter, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question, fill-in-the-blank. Less than a week after their dramatic rescue, the 33 blanks were united for an emotional religious ceremony.
Chilean miners.
Right. Law enforcement officials in Arlington, Virginia, were investigating who fired six shots at the blank building on Tuesday.
Pentagon?
Right. The Philippines were hit hard this week by Meggy, the slow-moving super blank.
Typhoon.
Right. Bob Guccione, the founder of Blank magazine, died at age 79.
Penthouse man,
right.
Rest in peace.
A Georgia man was arrested for trespassing at the Miami International Airport after he was caught blanking.
Pretending to be a pilot.
No, riding the baggage claim carousel. He is my hero. Parents groups criticized a racy GQ photo spread that featured three of the stars of the TV show Blank.
Glee?
Yes. Prosecutors have reached a plea agreement with Steven Slater, the blank who angrily exited a plane using the emergency chute.
JetBlue flight attendant?
Yes, indeed. A man in Washington State who escaped from a police car while handcuffed is being charged with escape and with blanking.
Escape plan. Theft of handcuffs.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Well done.
Whoa.
Hey.
Wow.
That was solid.
Wow.
When Eric Mitchell Layer jumped out of the police car and ran away, he thoughtlessly took the handcuffs on his wrists with him. Police are outraged. They say they love those handcuffs and that they were special. Carl, I think Peter did really well, did he not?
He had seven correct answers,
Peter. Oh, my gosh.
For 14 more points, Peter now has 16 points and the lead.
That's how it's done. All right.
Should have gone first.
Yeah. Mo, you're up next. Fill in the blank. In their worst-case scenario, the Federal Housing Finance Agency says the total for bailing out blank and blank could reach $363 billion.
If Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Right. Congress is investigating the Wall Street Journal report showing that games like Farmville have breached user privacy on blank.
Facebook.
Right. Officials announced that the two American hikers still being held in blank will be tried for spying next month.
Iran.
Right. Tom Bosley, best known for his role as Howard Cunningham on the show Blank, died at age 83.
Happy days.
Right. After Florida police found a bong while searching a man's car, the man responded by saying, blank.
Because I don't smoke pot. So is it, want to take a toke?
No, he said, thanks. I've been looking for that for 7 years. After a 16-day review, Bank of America announced that it had found no problems and would begin blanking on homes again.
Foreclosing.
Right. To test a story about mathematician Archimedes, President Obama taped an episode of Blank.
Mythbusters.
Right. At the suggestion of recruiters, Columbia University Business School has issued a memo to its students about how to blank.
How to clean yourself for an interview.
Yes!
Oh, my gosh, okay.
Very good.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
I know. Someday, they'll be billionaire hedge fund managers, but today, they're just filthy, unkempt hippies. Responding to complaints from recruiters, Columbia's memo reminds students they'll do a better job at job interviews if they remember to brush their teeth and other, quote, personal hygiene basics. In the students' defense, many are just holding out till they can afford to buy someone to bathe them. Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had a great round. Seven correct answers, 14 more points. He now has 16 points and is tied with Peter Gross.
That's amazing. All right.
We are so smart today. Wow, this is fun.
You have to only get six right.
So
I'm assuming you've saved all the hard ones.
Yes. Kiri was sitting pretty. She thought she had this married, but how many does she need to win?
Six to tie, seven to win outright.
Here we go, Kiri.
No
this
pressure.
Is for the game.
Seven is the new six.
Widespread protests against raising the retirement age erupted in blank this week.
France.
Right. Because of fuel pump and brake fluid problems, blank recalled 1.53 million vehicles worldwide.
Toyota.
Yes. Excitement in India over President Obama's visit next month was dampened by the announcement that he will visit blank in 2011.
Pakistan.
Right. Finally conceding that no one wants to give mouth to mouth, this week the American Heart Association officially changed its guidelines for administering blank.
CPR.
Right. At the Commonwealth Games, a 4-foot, 11-inch runner was disqualified for blanking in the steeplechase.
Ducking.
No, using a flower pot as a step to get him over the hurdle. Barbara Billingsley, best known for her role as June Cleaver in the sitcom Blank, died at age 94.
Leave it to Beaver.
Right. In a new book, a retired Secret Service agent revealed that in the hours after the Kennedy assassination, he almost accidentally shot blank.
Lyndon Johnson.
Right. California gubernatorial candidate Meg Whitman's campaign meant to send out a link to an endorsement video, but accidentally sent blank instead.
Porn?
Not quite. Oh. They sent a link to a video of a cross-dressing Japanese man playing the bass.
Oh, I saw that. that. He wears garters.
The link on Twitter was supposed to go to a law enforcement association's endorsement. Instead, linked to a video of a Japanese man in a tutu, thigh-high stockings, and armbands rocking out on the bass guitar in his own bedroom.
Well, she is going to sweep the Japanese cross-dressing.
Yeah. Actually, it's worse than that because the Japanese transvestite is now leading Whitman by 7 points in the polls. Carl, did Kiri do well enough to win?
She needed 6 to tie, and she had 6
correct answers to tie.
So we have three winners.
Wow.
Peter Gross,
wow.
Kiri O'Connor,
wow.
and Mo Rocca, a
tie
for this week's championship.
Yes. That's amazing.
When is the last time that such a thing has happened?
That was extraordinary.
We should split the money.
Yeah.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what the most popular Halloween costume will be this year. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Subaru, where all vehicles are built in zero landfill plants. Love is what makes a Subaru a Subaru. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And the Overbrook Foundation, supporting CatalogChoice.org, a nonprofit service that allows customers to decide which catalogs to receive in the mail. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Blythe Haga. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Mohamed Mao. A big congratulations to the winner of this week's Name That Crime contest on our blog, Mr. Al Dale. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lideman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the big Halloween costume this year? Peter Gross.
The Christine O'Donnell. It's a whole kit that comes complete with a witch's hat, an edited copy of the Constitution, and a chastity belt.
Kiri O'Connor.
Something scary, like full Muslim garb.
And Mo Rocca.
Naturally, the rent is too damn high guy.
And if we see any of those costumes, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Peter Gross, Kiri O'Connor. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week, Philadelphia, PA. See you there. This is NPR.